Welcome to another episode of North American Deer Talk, where the fusion of facts and opinions become the education and entertainment for all. This is your host, Josh Newton, and we have another great show for you today. Okay, folks, welcome back. This is Josh Newton, your host. It is November 5th, 2015. It is a fairly warm, sunny day here in central Pennsylvania where we are recording. We just got done doing our AI program yesterday, and everything seemed to go real well. So today's show is going to be about remote drug delivery, and basically that's just darts and dart guns. We'll cover some products, we'll cover some techniques, and a little bit of history about remote drug delivery. This will be presented from a perspective of using NewDart products. NewDart is one of our main sponsors, and I also work for the company as well. Tremendous company, and just they have some tremendous people and products there as well. So we'll get into that. And like I said, they're going to be the sponsor for today's show, and we'll highlight some of the really cool things that they have going on there. We'll give you a quick farm update. You know, the past month has been basically a preparation for our AI program and our embryo transfer ET program here. As far as the embryo transfer work goes, this will be our first year doing that. Very interesting procedure, and I really like the idea behind it and being able to preserve some of these does just like we preserve bucks. So We're gonna talk about that a little bit more in future episodes, and once I get some more data here, I'll certainly share that with you all. So just remember that you can always help support the show by going over to cervidsolutions.com and sign up for our CSM or our membership program. It's real simple to do. Just click on the membership button, go through the process there, and we certainly appreciate that. You'll get some great discounts on a variety of products that you probably already use. So it's worthwhile just to save some money over there. With that, we'll get into our main topic. I've put together a little presentation, so I'm just going to load that up here, and we'll get right into it. So captive, this will be based around you know, the basically the cervid industry. So whether that be, you know, your wildlife, your whitetails, muleys, elk, etc., and we'll touch on a little bit of the cattle industry too. So the captive cervid. Sorry, I'm loading up my process here. The captive cervid industry is a pretty large industry, even though it's a niche market. I believe there's approximately 10,000 farms here in the United States. Obviously, there's quite a few in Canada and Mexico. So with that, we'll talk a little bit about NewDart. Now, NewDart was established in 1969, so we're coming up 47, 48, 49 years, something like that. And it's really grown into be the leading manufacturer of remote drug delivery systems in the world. It's based out of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, which is really a beautiful place. That's where I live. And it serves all animal industries and wildlife agencies around the world. Now, Projector and Dart origins really, they started at least patent-wise in 1926 by Frank S. Woodrow. That was when the first recorded patent was filed. Now, today's darts have obviously evolved quite a bit, and we have the technologies in place, at least with the NewDart products, that help reduce induction periods and also are able to deliver antibiotics that are absorbed in the same fashion that they would be using a hand syringe. So we have the technology there to really match that type of injection. Now, NuDart incorporates a really unique firing mechanism, and basically that consists of four components. From the rear of the dart, or the tail forward, they're listed as follows: the firing pin, the spring, the powder cap, and then the plunger. Now, what happens is, and many of you may have seen our polycarbonate or clear darts, and they are from half cc up to 1.5 cc's, and then there's a transition into the aluminum bodies. But these clear darts, you can see the firing mechanism in the back. And what happens is, when the dart impacts the animal, that impact pressure compresses the spring, and the tip of the firing pin is able to penetrate the powder cap in the back, and there's a small explosion, if you will, or a chemical reaction with the powder, and that small explosion sends the plunger down the tube to the end of the dart, and then thus injecting whatever type of liquid medication you have into your dart through the cannula out, the needle is the cannula, into the animal. So it's a very simple yet very refined mechanism, and it works incredibly well. Now, NuDart also currently promotes 11 disposable dart capacities, and they have needle lengths from 1/2 inch all the way up to 2 inch, and they have the plane and the triport configurations. Now, they go from 1/2 cc up to 1.5, so it's 1/2 ones and 1.5 cc volumes, and then from 2 to 10, it's whole sizes. So those are all the aluminum body darts. So you can kind of pick and choose what you want to use as far as volume size. What I've found is, we don't, at least in the servant industry, we don't get much above the 4 or 5 cc range. Typically, our body weights are that such that we don't need to really deliver any meds over that amount. And if we do, we typically have to handle those animals because we're giving maybe multiple injections or larger volume sizes of multiple injections. So they're typically put into a chute or immobilized, and then the meds to be delivered by hand. Now, the needle configurations, what NuDart has done is they've taken and they've color coded their cannulas, and they do that by the color coding the gelatin collars. And what that is it's a dart retention device. So it's almost like a small triangle on the tip of the cannula. It's about halfway down or so, and it flares out almost like a wire barb, so to speak. But it's made of a gelatin material that actually dissolves once it penetrates through the hide of the animal and starts getting moisture and heat on it. It will start to dissolve, and then that dart will fall out. Now, the end port, or plain cannula, if you will, is color-coded with a green gelatin collar. The triport is color-coded with a red gelatin collar. Now, the cannulas are virtually identical, though the triport has two separate holes in the sidewalls of the cannula. And what that does is, instead of the medication coming directly out through the end port only, it will come out the end port and both of the side holes as well, which is the triport. What that does is, if you think about injecting an animal, and the way, let's say you're doing an IM injection, the way the muscle fibers are, they are against horizontal against the way that the needle goes in. So that triport actually puts liquid laterally, and it allows it to absorb quite a bit better because it's going in between the muscle fibers. Now, you cannot get the triports on smaller than a 3/4 inch needle. So, you're not going to be able to get that on the half inch needle, which is fine because the half inch needle is set up for a sub-Q injection. So we'll get into that in a little bit about choosing, the proper darts and such for what you need. And, we'll go on from there. Now, the rationale and responsibility of remote injection is something that we need to think about. Some of the rationale is whether we're doing treatment or a physical examination of the animals. Do we want to do some contraceptive work, whether we're in wildlife or assisted reproduction, such as an AI program or semen collections or something along those lines? Are we working in a wildlife or a capture setting where we need to get hands on that animals because we're doing a study of some sort? We also have DNA darts here at New Dart, or biopsy darts, and really, really interesting product that basically takes a normal dart body and ferrule, which is the part that goes on the end of the dart before where the needle is. And in this case, they actually remove the needle, and there's a very small piece of wire with a tiny, tiny barb on it. You have to look pretty close at it. And around that is a cutter. So it's a small cylinder type cutter that's, I haven't measured it, but I would guess it's probably an eighth inch around. And what you do is you fire that at the animal. I typically like to do that by shooting them in the hindquarter section, and it hits them, and it almost immediately bounces out. And what you do is you go over and you pick up that dart, and it has a small, tiny core sample of flesh there. Now, if you think about the recommended samples that, in this case, let's just say DNA solutions would require for DNA work, they'll say that, you know, blood is fine. Many of us pull hair on our animals, and they want the follicles off of the hair. So when you grab onto the hair in the back with a small hemostat and you yank that out, they want the little root part of the hair follicle. This does that remotely without having to handle the animal, which is great. So what you do is you recover that dart, you can place the whole dart into a dart tube with 70% rubbing alcohol or isopropyl alcohol. Just mark that tube with a, you know, tag number and the date collected, and seal that top up. I like to wrap a little duct tape or packing tape around the top of the cap just to ensure that it stays there. Or you can even unscrew the end of the ferrule off of the DNA dart and just drop the little tissue sample into a smaller vial. So another rationale is movement, whether we're moving animals to another facility or into, let's just say, a breeding pen or something along those lines. Let's say you have some animals escape. That would be another another way to use the products. Obviously, you want to get those animals back. Poor handling facilities. Anytime you have a handling facility that is not set up properly, it's probably safer to use some sort of remote injection and handle the animals that way. And then there's obviously euthanasia. You can use the products to, you know, sedate or immobilize the animals and then administer the euthanasia from there. I prefer to use a much cheaper method, and that would be a 22. So anyway, before you take action, you have to question a few things. And here's just some little tips and tricks that I've picked up. The use of binoculars cannot be understated for the examination of animals on the hoof. Now, when I am considering treating an animal, My binoculars or optics are probably one of the most important pieces of equipment that I have at my disposal. I have an excellent set of binocs. I have some Swarovski 10x42 ELs. They're phenomenal binoculars. I know many guys have some really great optics, and there's a reason for that. They want to be able to assess that animal's condition from afar without disturbing it in its natural environment and be able to make the best decision they can, whether they need to handle that animal through chemical immobilization or not. So always have a good set of binocs, spotting scopes, something like that. Whatever you do, just get the best possible set of optics you can and use those all the time. It's always good to look at those animals. So another question we have to ask ourselves is capture or pharmaceutical treatment really needed? And you'll have to make that decision obviously on your own, but every situation warrants a different approach. Can you provide for all the animal's needs while it's immobilized? In other words, do you have a oxygen machine? Do you have a place where you can handle that animal where it's temperature controlled, so on and so forth? And that goes into the next question is, can you monitor them adequately? So do you have everything in place that you need to be able to safely handle these animals in a proper way, so they get up through the reversal process and they're back on their feet in a safe manner? Common problems while handling cervid livestock would include inopportune flights and hazards. So maybe it's a really windy day. Number one, we know that at least white-tailed deer, and I'm assuming some of the other species, I haven't done too much extensive work with the other cervid species, but I know whitetail in particular use their sense of nose a lot for their sensing of danger. And when it's windy, they tend to be a little more on edge because that sense of smell is somewhat taken away from them. It just gets them worked up a little bit. Are there sticks in the way? Is there tall grass in the way of your shooting path? All those things need to be taken into consideration. Aspiration or bloat is one of the things that we deal with. Now, when you have a ruminant animal, they don't have a way to vent off any gas buildup from in their stomach. So if you're talking to any type of vet who's doing a surgical procedure on an animal, and it's the same with people, they want you to make sure that you don't eat or drink prior to the surgery. Well, the reason for that is they don't want you to potentially aspirate or throw up anything that's in your stomach while you're sedated and potentially take that back down into the lungs. There's a whole host of problems that go along with that, and you just don't want that. So we want to be very very aware of that as we're going through the process of handling them. Now, bloat bloat's tricky. I've had some animals start gassing up or bloating on me. You can roll them over, right side down and take a 2-inch needle. Last chance kind of circumstances, so it's not something you want to do all the time. And take that needle and actually stick it through behind the rear rib into the stomach, and actually vent the gases off from there physically. So there's hyper and hypothermia. That would come into play with their body regulation once the animals are immobilized, at least with some different types of drugs. Their thermal regulation is really thrown off. There is stress and capture myopathy. Now, anytime that we're handling animals, here's a good rule of thumb. If you go into an enclosure or a pen environment and the animals are get worked up prior to you delivering the dart to the animal, if their tongues are hanging out, and they've been kind of worked up more than a couple minutes, You need to step out of that pen and come back in a half hour and let them calm down. Do not rush that delivery of the drug. You will find that more often than not, he'll pay the price in the end because that animal will get a large buildup of lactic acid in its system, and it basically crashes their system and doesn't allow them to recover. Now, they might wake up initially, but this can go on over the period of a few hours or even up to weeks after a sedation, and their system just can't handle it. So that's something to consider when you're handling the animals. Other considerations are if you are immobilizing a herd or a single animal. Now, there's different techniques that you can use if you're doing just a single animal versus a herd. Single animals tend to be a little bit easier because obviously you're only delivering one dart. If you're darting a large group of animals, you have to have some plan B, plan C, plan D kind of things in place if all doesn't go well. Weather is a real, real important thing to think about because, like I said, excuse me, when I was talking about the thermal regulation, it's really important to make sure that those animals do not overheat, or if you're darting in extreme cold, like we have sometimes up here in the Northeast, Midwest, etc. You know, you're going to want to be able to handle those animals in a safe manner. Is it overcast versus, you know, sunlight? I'll share a quick story. We had, this was one of the, I think it was the first year we lap AI, and I want to say that was 2004, maybe 2004, 2003, something, 2003, 2004. We did 16 to 20 does, and I don't remember the exact number, but we lap AI'd all of them, and it was nice, really nice weather in the morning. And I believe we started maybe somewhere around 7:30, 8 o'clock. And by the time we got finished with the last couple does, we put them out in the pen, and there was a cloud cover. It was really overcast in the morning, maybe in the 50s, which was, you know, perfect. It was cool, comfortable, and the sun came out and it burned the cloud cover off. And literally within, you know, 20, 30 minutes, that temp was up 75 plus degrees. And the animals were still recovering. Now, these were the days of Zaozine and Tiozol, and the recovery times on that are just not near what they are with the newer drug combinations. We'll talk about that just in a little bit. But we ended up losing, I want to say, two does. One, you know, really never recovered from the... you know, the whole process, and one did get up, but she died a few days later. So it's important to kind of keep that in the back of your mind, check your weather, check your temperatures, you know, is it cold, is it going to be rainy, and just have some plans in place so you're able to be able to handle those things. Now, we'll talk about some of the most common drugs that we use for cervid species, and I'm just going to go through these real quick. Xylazine is a real common one. It's also called Rompin or Anised. Those are the factory names, or the trade names, so to speak. Xylazine is the actual drug. There's compounded forms. You can buy them from the company. It's commonly mixed with another type of drug. So Xylazine is in the alpha class of drugs, works on the muscular system. So you'll find that in combination with ketamine or telazol, it has a pretty powerful effect at, you know, being able to immobilize animals. Xylazine is fully reversible, and that's done with a product called tolazine. There's another drug that we mentioned just 2 seconds ago, and that is the Tiozol, and that's a class 3 DEA drug, and it's most commonly used with the Xylazine. Now, it has what I consider good knockdown power and a relatively long time duration of its effectiveness, and I would put that in the 40 to 80 minute range. Now, what we found is the induction period, or the time that it takes from when the dart hits the animal for the animal to go down and actually be able to get your hands on them, is pretty decent. You know, we'll see anywhere from 12 to 20, 25 minutes, depending on how good you were with adjusting your dosages. It's just not a particularly smooth drug in its reversal, because it's not reversible. So it needs to be metabolized into the body. Now, ketamine is another drug that is becoming more and more used by folks in the servant industry. I would consider ketamine poor in its knockdown power. And I say that because you can only concentrate ketamine and suspend it in liquid form at 172 megs per mil before it does not reconstitute into the liquid. So I use ketamine as a redose or a topper drug. Now, what's a topper drug? I'm just throwing out some terms that I use here. They're not technical or scientific terms, but a topper drug would be when reverses the metatomidine, does it very quickly and smoothly. The animals get up and they're on their way. Now, between the two, what I've seen personally is the reversal process with BAM compared to MK. Now, the MK, when you reverse it, it seems to me, especially depending on the dosage of ketamine that they get, when we're doing some surgical procedures, we're usually giving I don't want to say a healthy dose, but, you know, enough to handle them safely. It seems like the ketamine is still on board a little bit when we're reversing. So they do not come out of the reversal quite as smooth as the BAM. There's no question about that. When you use BAM for the first time or the 100th time, it still impresses me. You can, as soon as you're done doing whatever you're doing with them, you give them their two reversals, the naltrexone and the antipamazole. And boy, those animals, you can set your watch to it almost, you know, within 5 minutes, they're up on their feet. Pretty interesting the first few times that you do it. If you watch those animals close, the same thing happens every time. Blink of the eye, or the eye opens a little bit. The breathing just touches up a notch or two. You will get the cud reflex to start working again, and they will literally lay there with their eyes closed, like they're chewing on a piece of steak. You know, obviously they're chewing on their cud, but they look awful happy doing it. That in that particular instance, you do have to be careful about aspiration, or that liquid going back into their lungs. So just make sure they're positioned sternally or on their chest, and you'll be just fine. But they get right up after that, and they're on their feet. It's pretty stuff. So now, any of the New Dart products, as far as the darts go, you know, pretty much any liquid medication that your vet recommends can go into the dart. Now, you're going to want to obviously check with your vet, and if you don't have a vet that's willing to work with you, you know, contact some other local farmers and get some insights from them as far as to what vets they're using, and develop those relationships, because it's really important. Those vets have obviously the time and the technical expertise to guide you through what types of drugs are safe to use in these animals. So keep that in mind. Obviously, vaccines, vitamins, any type of that liquid medication can be used. So, calculating drug dosages. I'm not going to get too much into this. One thing is important for future references. So when you're trying to calculate drug dosages, make sure that you keep a little log of what you gave to each animal and how they reacted. And you'll find that some animals do better with certain types of drugs. Some animals do better with certain types of drugs in certain dosages. So we have some animals here that they tend to take, even though their body weight is the same as another animal, they tend to take, 15 or 20% more, drug by volume to handle them safely. So, that's just, we're guessing from previous handlings and in our notes as to what they can use. We like to use the 10% rule. If you think an animal is 200 pounds and you're preparing a dose for a 200 pound animal, add 10% to that and you'll be in a really safe and ethical place to be as far as delivering those drugs to them. There's some great reference literature on this. The Handbook of Wildlife Chemical Immobilization, the third edition by Terry J. Krieger and John Arminio, is an excellent book. It has a lot of different dosages in there for a variety of animals. So you can check that out. Again, that's the Handbook of Wildlife Chemical Immobilization by Terry Krieger. I know that is available at newdart.com, so you can check that out. We also recommend that you attend a Safe Capture International training class with Dr. Keith Amas. Dr. Keith's been training folks for a couple decades now in chemical immobilization. He's handled a pile of different species, an excellent class. So check that out. That's Safe Capture International. Now we're going to get into some of the equipment. NewDart has broken up their projector lines into basically three different types of projectors. So you have your air fired models, your gauge CO2 models, and your cartridge fire models. Now, we'll talk about the air-fired projectors first. There is two different models there to look at. One would be the Model 178B. That's based off the Benjamin Sheridan, basically the pump gun that we're used to seeing, real similar to, let's just say, the looks of a pellet gun. But it's retrofitted with the 50 cal barrel, which supports the NewDart darts. And basically, you load a dart in the rear breech. It has a little O-ring setup and spring assembly to adjust your pressure, and you pump it up. So depending on your dart size and distance to target, you would adjust your pumps from there. It's by far our most popular model, and I believe that's because of the price point. Many farmers use that. It's not my cup of tea because I'm not into, pumping up a rifle 6, 8, 10 times to deliver a dart. But, for some people, it works just fine. There's also the Model 190B, and that is basically a pistol version of the 178, if you will. It's a little pump, a pump pistol. So if you're shooting some smaller darts and tighter areas or confined spaces or not real far away, you could use the 190 for that. Now, the two cartridge fire models that NewDart offers are the Model 389 and the Model 196. Now, the 196 is very popular amongst cattle ranchers, and we find that it has a little bit increased power ports on it, or the power coupler on it has a little bit larger holes to accommodate a larger size dart as far as its power to get that dart out there. The 389 is by far the top of the line cartridge fire model that NewDart manufactures, and it has some really nice features. It has a breech barrel. In other words, the barrel actually opens with a small toggle on the operator side if you're a righty, and it breaks open right on a hinge right in the middle, and you load your dart in there, and then the power control settings are in the rear, right below the scope aperture. So they come with a 3x9 scope on them. You can get all these projectors in a variety of different setups, whether it be camo with a black stock, or a black blued barrel. You want to do camo on camo. You want to do black synthetic with the e-nickel finish or the electroless nickel finish, which is very similar to a stainless. So there's all different setups you can get, and all those options are on the newdart.com website in the projector section. But back to the 389, it has that power control setting in the rear, and what that allows you to do is when you're on target and you have the rifle brought up against your shoulder and you're looking through the scope, you can easily just spin your thumb up and your forefinger and just adjust that pressure setting right there. So it's very convenient. It's easy to get the correct power setting there. I used a cartridge fire model. I actually used the predecessor to both these models, and that was the 193 stainless steel. That's what I learned on, and I used that for 10 years, and it had such a, like anything else, I got comfortable with it and had a really great feel. So I didn't really want to switch over into the gauge CO2 model, and there's two separate models for that. One's the Excalibur and the X2. But once I got my hands on the Excalibur specifically, I really fell in love with it. It's the best projector on the market, hands down. There's I believe more deer farmers and surveyed livestock operators with that projector than I believe probably any other. It's dynamite. 28-inch rifled stainless barrel, has a rear loading butt plate, so you depress the butt plate with a small toggle in the back, and the butt plate pulls up, rotates 90 degrees, and you load your dart right in the back. So the dart sits in the rear of the projector, so when you squeeze the trigger, it has to go down, 28 inches of barrel. So it's incredibly accurate. It stabilizes those darts really, really well. It's a full volume dump control. And what that means is when you turn the pressure dial, which is located under the front sight aperture of the scope that's mounted on there, it's basically right where you hold your left hand. If you're a right-handed trigger shooter, it's right where that left hand goes, and you can adjust the pressure up and down. The pressure gauge sits on the left-hand side of the projector when in place on the shoulder, and it falls right into your line of sight. So you have this really nice, fully gauged model, and it allows you to basically... I tell folks that the projector itself will shoot better than they can. And what I mean is you can dial that in at any range with any dart and distance to target and deliver that dart perfectly every time if you know the pressure settings and your yardage. So one of the neat things that we did is I pulled off the standard 3x9 scope, and I put the Bushnell digital range finding scope. It's a 4x12, and it has a ballistic mil dot rectical in it. And it's got a little button on the side, and you put that on your target. You press the button on the side, and it gives you a nice little digital readout within the scope sight itself. So once I get that, I look at my cheat sheet that I have taped on the side of my butt plate, and I just dial that pressure in, and I can shoot spot on every time, which is really nice, because when you get into delivering some of these medications, some of these darts with the meds in them, they can cost anywhere from, $20, $30, $40 even. So we want to make sure that we're delivering that medication in a ethical manner, and as well, we're getting the stuff where it needs to go. So the X-Cal is just dynamite, 100% American made. It's got all of stainless steel internal working parts. Very little can go wrong with it. I mean, obviously it's an air powered projector, so there is some O-rings. General maintenance is good. You keep it clean, you keep your your O-ring's well lubricated, and it'll last you a while. I've been using that, I think, seven years now, something like that, and it's been dynamite. Its baby brother, if you will, is the X2, and it's a pistol version of the Excalibur. Small, compact, same full-volume dump system. So basically when you put that pressure in the projector, it goes into a reservoir, if you will. When you squeeze the trigger, there's a butterfly valve that opens up. The air rushes through the tube, behind the dart, and then out the barrel. So you get 100% of that air going behind the dart and forcing it down the barrel. The nice thing about that is on some models, it's actually pulling directly from the tank when you open the pressure gauge. So if your tank's low, the gauge may be reading, but it may be creeping down, and it's just not a good thing. So that's the nice thing about the X-Cal and the X2 is if the pressure is listed on the dial, that is exactly the pressure that you're going to get when you squeeze the trigger. One thing to keep in mind with both those projectors is they are unlike the cartridge fire models where you can trigger creep. In other words, we're many of us are accustomed to shooting, your standard firearm or high-powered rifle, and we've always been taught, obviously breathe and just slowly creep that trigger back till crack, it goes off. You don't want to do that with the X-Cal or the X2, and the reason being is if you start creeping that trigger, the air will slowly leak out because the butterfly valve starts opening. Again, it's a full-volume dump. You want all the pressure in the reservoir to shoot back through the tube and then behind the dart. So you want to have a nice crisp trigger pull. Shoot it a couple times, you get very used to it. All of the projectors come with trajectory charts, and you have practice darts that go along with that and your target, and you take it out of the box, you get comfortable with it, you get sighted in, you do some practicing, and then you can go out and effectively deliver those darts in a proper manner. So, take a look at some of those new dart projectors. That's a little overview of them. They'll treat you well, obviously. Pricing is a determining factor in a lot of these, and some of the nice features on them, and you'll be really happy with your investment. So check those out. Again, that's the new dart projectors, the air powered, the cartridge fire, and the gauge CO2s. I recommend the Excalibur. It's a nice, well rounded system. As far as the darts go, there is obviously some size considerations, your needle types, depending on which drugs you're delivering, is going to determine your needle length. So if you want to do a sub-Q, if you're delivering antibiotics, subcutaneously, you're going to have a half-inch gel collar is the recommended length that I use. That gives you a nice sub-Q injection. You have the DNA darts. We also have a transmitter system. The transmitter system is for animals that are on larger tracks of ground that are going to have some flight response from you and get away, and you need to be able to find them. And what it is basically it is a dart with a transmitter in the back, and that transmitter sends a radio frequency back to a handheld unit. So you load your dart up, you turn your transmitter on, you load your battery in the back, and when you shoot the animal, it has a dual barb on the cannula, and that does not allow that dart to come out. So the animal runs off, and you wait 5 or 10 minutes, you can actually track that animal to where it goes. Really cool stuff. We see that a lot in the wildlife agencies, but some of these guys that are doing studies out on their ranches or have to do some capture work or things like that, the transmitter is a great option. We also have a variety of optics and scopes. I did talk about that 4x12 Bushnell digital range finding scope. Check that out. That is a great add-on piece. Yes, it is a little expensive. You will pay for it in the darts that you miss, because you don't have a rangefinder with you, or it's just a little cumbersome, so you don't bring it with you. Get one of those; they're phenomenal. If you don't like the price point of the range finding scope, you can get a regular range finder. We have some nice Bushnell ones there. Also, you need to have what we call a med kit. Now, I just use basically an old fishing tackle box or a toolbox or a bag, whatever you got. But it's a place where you can keep your syringes and your darts and some of your basic supplies that you need, a few meds. Rubbermaid totes are great for keeping extra supplies. And we built some kits. So I have a general kit. I have a suturing kit. I have my antler removal kit, my foot kit, for working on hoofs and stuff. So you can go through some of those. If you want to learn a little bit more about those, you can just shoot me an email over. It's, J Newton, N-E-W-T-O-N, at servantsolutions.com. I'd be happy to correspond back and forth with you and talk a little bit about, some of the things that you need within those kits. Another thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to practice, practice, practice. Knowing your equipment and practicing is probably one of the most important things you can do before you go out and dart those animals. Now, another nice thing is we all need to be able to get away from our farms or ranches every once in a while. And having a sheet that's taped onto the stock for each particular projector is important. And that'll be able to allow people that have not used the projector to pick it up, shoot a couple practice darts, get comfortable with it, and then go ahead and deliver a live dart to an animal if you're not around for some reason. So each projector is going to be sighted in a little bit differently. The trajectory charts that come with the projector are recommended settings, and you can kind of tweak from there, whatever really works best for you. So just make sure you do some practicing. It's really important to get comfortable with your equipment before you use it. You're also going to want to protect your investment by using scheduled maintenance and cleaning procedures to keep any piece of equipment really that you have, but including your dart projector. So we have some hops cleaning kits, we have some special brushes, certain gun oils that we recommend, and just make sure you keep your stuff clean and well taken care of. You know, there's nothing worse than having a projector that doesn't work because it hasn't been cleaned. So make sure you look at some of those things. It's real important. There are some safety considerations that we need to look at and be responsible for as cervid livestock operators. We want to make sure that we handle any of the medications or drugs that we use in a proper manner and look at the withdrawal times that are listed on the labels. Yes, many of those are listed for other species of animals, but they're going to put us in a range and a place where we can feel comfortable about having a safe animal to potentially eat down the road. We also want to consider animal safety. One of the things that you have to watch out for is other animals in the pen. So if you've handled some bucks before in groups, you know that especially this time of year, again, we're in November, these boys are starting to rut and all they want to do is kill each other. So as soon as you dart an animal and it starts going down, those other animals get right on it and they want to hurt it. So we have to be able to safely get those other animals out of the way and be able to literally protect the animal that is going to be sedated and immobilized. Another problem that I've seen, and I've seen it once because I learned a hard lesson, I'll share this quick story with you, is predation, and that's through birds of prey. Now, I went, I'm trying to remember, I had a gentleman coming up, and he was bringing me a buck to breed with, and he was taking a Dauphin that he had purchased, and at the time it was an incredibly expensive Dauphin. So I went out, I darted her, and while she was going down, I went inside, I got some of my meds and stuff together. Inside, I mean my barn, which is just basically right outside my pens, my handling barn. And when I came back out, she was already laying down. And there was a group of vultures that had come down and were starting to literally work on her. They chewed a small hole right in her rear hind quarter, and they started pecking out the corner of her eye and also part of her tongue. And it was, I mean, I was kind of in shock. I ran out there, you know, I got the birds away, gave her a quick physical inspection, and I picked her up and I took her down to the vet's office for a little quick emergency stitch up, because I wasn't really comfortable with stitching at the time. So when we got down there, the vet had sealed up the wound in her rear hindquarter, which was, you know, probably 2 inches long, and he got her all sewed back up. The vultures had eaten off about, an inch and a half of her tongue, and they didn't do too much damage to the eye, but they were getting ready to. So I'm glad I came out when I did. Anyway, she lived for another year and a half or so, and you know, she did quite well without having a tongue, though it was a bit of a struggle through the winter months, because she salivated a lot and she didn't really have a way to clean that up. Anyway, it is incredibly important that you are 100% prepared in what you do as soon as you squeeze that trigger and the dart enters the animal. All animals will respond differently to the drugs. Some will go down quick, some won't. But you need to be able to monitor those animals during that entire induction period, because you don't want to have things like what I just talked about happen. I'm always prepared now. I don't run back in to get things unless I absolutely have to, but I try to take as many precautions as I can so that doesn't happen again. So keep that in mind. That's just a little story I wanted to share. There's also some human equipment and safety. We have to remember that common sense goes a long way. You have to be sure that your barrel's clear of any obstructions. You know, if you have something stored out in your barn, or, you know, in a place, you know, you never know, there might be a mouse nest in it, or who knows. It's also important not to alter or modify your projector and have it serviced regularly. You know, the projectors from the factory stock, aside from maybe some optic changes or you know, something like that, or any of the, let's just say we do a factory upgrade or something, it's important to keep those as they are, because they function in a safe manner and they'll work well for you. And again, we talked about cleaning a little bit before. It's important to make sure that you have those on your calendar, those cleaning times, that, you know, if you shoot 50 or 100 darts through it, go ahead and clean your projector out. It's you know, it takes you 5-10 minutes. It's important to do, because you want it to work the next time, and you know, you'll know that if you help, you know, keep it clean. You also want to learn all the mechanical and handling characteristics of your immobilization equipment that you're using. So if you're using cartridge fire model, you know, you're going to want to know the differences between the brown, green, and yellow charges. If you're using the Excalibur, let's say, there's two different tank options. One takes a 12-gram, basically disposable tank. The other one takes there's a 3.5-ounce refillable tank. Know the difference between the two. Know how to put them on and off. Know where your extra O-rings are if you blow an O-ring gasket. All those things. And a quick reference for that is just the self-help section at newdart.com. You can go there. Everything's listed out. There's some great videos on there, and it's a great place as far as resources go to be able to keep those projectors in good, safe working order and make sure that you stay safe as well. Trajectory. We want to talk about the projectile's path that it travels from the muzzle to the point of impact. Now, there are different settings on each one of these projectors, and you have to become accustomed and comfortable to each one of those. There's one thing that you want to keep in mind. You always want to deliver the dart with the least amount of force possible to the animal. So we want to have some arc in our darts. When you get that dart delivered to the animal, let's just say you're at 20 yards, you want to be able to hold over a little bit or have your pressure settings set so that when that dart comes out of the barrel, it goes up first and then comes down. We don't want to have a hard line straight trajectory. It doesn't serve any purpose to, you know, potentially put a hematoma on that animal, which is a gathering of blood or a bruise, because that'll inhibit some of the absorption of the medication that you're putting into that animal. We want that done as properly as possible. In addition to that, it's not good for the animal. You know, we have these guys. It's our responsibility to take care of them. We don't want to hurt them. So again, that comes with practice. So you want to continue to do that. Anatomy considerations for remote injection are really important. And what that means basically is we need to look at the size of the animals. We need to know the muscle groups. We need to know what types of medications we're using, the drug volumes, etc. There are certain unique anatomy considerations that you'll find, such as seasonal differences in certain species of animals, subcutaneous fat, skin thickness, etc. So, for instance, one example would be in white-tailed deer, obviously, over the summer, the hair on them is much thinner than, let's say, in December or February in upper Wisconsin. They have large subcutaneous fat layers to keep them protective and warm during the winter. So we want to take all that into consideration. What does that mean for delivering darts? Well, what that means is if I'm delivering an antibiotic subcutaneously and I want to make sure that in the winter that I get through the hair and the hide, I may, instead of going with the, you know, a half inch gel collar, I may need to go up to a 3/4. It really just depends on what I'm doing. A lot of times the half inch is still good. Certainly in the summer, there is absolutely no need for a 3/4 inch needle. If you're trying to do a sub Q injection on a white-tailed deer, the half inch gel collar is more than plenty to get through the hide and give you a nice sub Q shot. Now, when you're doing immobilization, obviously we want to get that drug into the muscle of the animal, whether that be up in the neck or that be in the hind quarter region. But we want to find a large piece of meat or a large muscle group. I personally like to use the neck area. I think the induction process is a little bit quicker, and I think the absorption rate is a little better in the neck region than it is, let's say, in the hind quarter, at least on whitetails. Now, I will go with almost exclusively from October till, you know, we get into, you know, April when they start shedding out that winter coat, I will use almost exclusively 1-inch needles if I'm doing any type of immobilization. In the summer, again, when that thick hair is gone and their subcutaneous fat layer on their body is greatly reduced, I can get away with some 3/4 inch. The only thing that I am using is I'm almost exclusively using triport needles on these. So I like that lateral discharge. Again, that's that triport needle, you know, the injection comes out the end of the cannula. It also has two small holes on each side, and you'll get that lateral distribution. It'll help with your absorption. It'll help with your induction of your meds. So keep that in mind. NewDart's also recently come out with a slow inject product. Now, on the consumer end of things, you will not see a difference in your product. However, the internal functioning parts of the darts will be somewhat modified, and it actually is the first slow inject dart on the market, and it will reduce the injection speed and time by up to 15 times. So pretty cool product. Those should be on the market soon. Looking forward to getting those and using those exclusively. You actually won't be able to buy anything but the slow inject. So we're transitioning over to that. But again, you won't see any physical difference on the outside of what you're looking at. Now, in addition to those anatomy considerations, I'm looking at a slide in front of me, and you can't really see what I'm looking at. But there's three animals in three different positions, and it shows those different shot placements for what we're doing. Again, we just talked about, you know, injections in the neck and the shoulder region. Any type of antibiotics that are delivered, we have what we trademarked at NewDart called the O-Zone. And it's basically a kind of oblong, elongated area that runs from the base of the neck down to the the front of the shoulder region. Any of those is really a great spot for your sub-Q shots on these animals. You'll have a little bit of give in the animal. There's some little bit of fat tissue there and kind of some extra hair, so you're not injecting into that muscle region. Now, the unrecommended shot placements, you have to always consider a couple things, and I'll use two examples for you. There's many more, but two specifically. So if you're darting an animal and you're darting them out of a group, you always need to look what is behind that animal. So let's envision this, that there's two bucks standing there. One is in the front, one is in the back. Now, the buck standing in the front is completely broadside, and you're going to go ahead and you're going to deliver an immobilization dart to the hind quarter of that animal. Well, the animal behind him, their head, he also is perpendicular to you, so he's facing completely broadside, but his head is directly above that hind quarter. We would never want to take that shot, because if you miss and it potentially goes over that first animal and it hits the second animal, maybe in the eye or the face, you don't want to hurt that animal behind or unnecessarily dart him. So that's something to keep in mind. Always be aware of those other animals in the pen. You never want to have an animal walk in front of one you're trying to shoot at, so you have to really be aware. There's the second thing to think about is when you're dealing with bucks, you know, we consider, you know, a hind quarter shot a safe and effective place to deliver a dart for immobilization. Now, if that animal is quartering away from you, you do not want to dart it. There's two reasons that you don't want to shoot it in the hind quarter. Or if you look at a white-tailed deer, they have that gray or brownish coat on the side, and then when they get to the tail, it turns to white. Number one is the muscle fibers run in an opposite, you know, there we talked about the muscle fibers and the end port and triport discharge, but they run opposite. So when you're shooting directly into them, it's a much softer piece of meat. And if you're delivering a dart at a, you know, potentially a higher rate of speed, you can potentially put that dart into the meat because it's not, you know, it's not as thick. The hide's not as thick, and that muscle fiber is shaped in a different way. So be careful of that. Number two, you don't want to hit the buck in the testicles because you potentially can make them sterile. I can almost guarantee you'll probably go down and you'll get your hands on them. But, you know, if you're dealing with breeder bucks, you know, that's the absolute last thing that you want to do. So keep that in mind. There's a pile of different things that you shouldn't do, and there's a bunch that you shouldn't, but those are just two quick ones off the top of my head that I'll share with you. Now, handling immobilized animals, you need to we talked a little bit about some of the things you need to do. We'll cover that again. You need to think about heating and cooling them, monitoring them, the equipment you'll need, and how you're going to move them. So obviously a lot of these animals are as big as we are or larger. And I personally have difficulty without machinery handling a buck by myself. They're too big to do. So we want to make sure that we either have help on hand or we have some sort of mechanical advantage that we can take care of. You're always going to want to cover their eyes with some type of mask. I've seen deer farmers are very, very resourceful people, as are other cervid livestock operators. I've seen guys take sweatshirt sleeves, cut them off, and use the elastic around the wristband to put that over their head and hold that on. I've seen guys use towels, bandanas. They've taken the shirt off their back. I know I've done that more than once. We choose not to do those things anymore. There's some really great masks that actually have Velcro on them. They attach underneath the chin area or the bottom of the head of the animal, and they're adjustable, and then they have a strap that goes around the ears or the antlers and goes around from one side around the back of the head and attaches on the other. Again, that's fully adjustable too. That's really the best means of covering them up. Now, why do we cover up those animals' eyes? Two reasons. One is their blink response is gone. So if they are in direct sunlight, the sunlight can burn their eyes and they can go blind. Now, that's an extreme circumstance, but it is important to remember. Number two, they can't blink, so they're not able to keep flies out of there. Debris can get in there, and you can end up scratching their eyes, which we don't want to do. So we want to make sure that their eyes are covered, there's not a lot of light sensitivity, and you'll be better for it. You also want to have some sort of stretcher of some kind to potentially put that animal on, move it, put it on a cart, a trailer, etc. You can go to an army surplus store. That seems to be the best route to go. You know, having some sort of heavy canvas nylon stretcher. Again, those army stretchers are great. I've seen, you know, kind of cheaper ones with the wood handles. We have those. They work great. And then I've seen guys have, you know, metal ones and aluminum handles and rubber coated this. And it just depends on what you have. But those army surplus stretchers are really great. Pre-capture preparations. So planning in advance. Having an emergency kit with the labeled syringe preloaded with the antagonist drug. What's an antagonist drug? That's your reverser. So you always want to pull your reverser prior to pulling your knockdown drug. So let's just say we were using BAM, for instance. You would want to take your anapamazole and your naltrexone and draw those up and have those ready to go. Why do we do that beforehand? Well, and why do we label them? Well, if you stick yourself, you know, God forbid that happens, but you're going to want to have the reversers on hand. But it's always good to have those loaded up. That way, if you have an issue with an animal, boom, you can reverse them. You want to be able to monitor their breathing. Having a thermometer on hand to check body temps is also good because you can stem off some issues that come with that. We want to try to minimize the pursuit on these animals. So white-tailed deer generally, most livestock are creatures of habit and they're social animals. So we want to try to work any type of immobilization or dart delivery around their natural times that we interact with them. So a lot of guys will feed treats on their ranch, treats, apples, carrots, peanuts, whatever. And that allows the animals to come up, get some good nutrition, and it allows the rancher to inspect each animal on a daily basis, make sure their health's good, feet look good, everything's all good to go. That would be a perfect time to do any type of dart delivery procedures. The animals are not thinking you're going to do anything bad to them. They come up, they're at closer ranges, so you can have a much better success rate in delivering your dart, etc. So that's really important. Food intake. Pulling food is another little trick that you can do prior to darting. So let's just say we wanted to dart some animals on a Friday afternoon evening. We may go out Thursday night and we may not feed that particular pen of deer. And the next day when you go out there to feed, all those animals are going to come up because they're going to want their chow for the day. So pulling that beforehand is good. It also doubles as a preventative for bloat and aspiration, which we talked about earlier. So that kind of dovetails into that nicely. And don't break your habits. You know, again, those deer and cervid species are all creatures of habit. Stick within those parameters and you'll be just fine. Now, post-darting approach, we can do a couple different things. Number one, we're going to grab our handy binocs. We're going to check those animals from afar once they lay down just to make sure that head placement is good. You know, their tongues may be hanging out so it doesn't roll on the back of their head. Their eyes are closed. They're not twitching. And that'll allow us to look at them and not disturb them or wake them back up, get a little, you know, dose of adrenaline there, and then they're, you know, they're back on their feet walking around. So that's important. we want to make sure that the stimuli from people handling animals is as minimal as possible. I like to work, I work by myself a lot, especially when I'm handling these guys. I've come to a place where I'm comfortable doing that, and I can do that in a safe manner for not only myself, but the animal as well. And we want to make sure that there's not a ton of people around causing a ruckus, and it's just not good for those animals. Because number one, you know, if an animal gets up and ends up hurting somebody, that's not good for anybody. You know, the person first and foremost, and then obviously the animal could get hurt too. We want to make sure that we approach the animals from the backside, and we want to do that carefully. So you never want to, let's just say you're darting bucks and they have antlers on, you never want to walk directly up from the front on those animals, because if that animal gets up, it's going to take you out, and you don't want to mess with those guys. So you come up from the backside. You know, once you get the mask on them and you've checked them to make sure that the immobilization drugs have worked properly, you know, you have a little bit of breathing room there, but you always want to be cognizant of the fact that you have an animal on the ground. It's important that you're safe about it. Nobody wants to get hurt, and you don't want to hurt the animal. You always want to make sure that you check the airways of the animal, and you make sure that the tongue's out and that they're able to have a straight breathing path so they can get air in their systems. You know, extend that neck and that head out. That's really important. When you're waking those animals up, having some sternal recumbency is definitely warranted and important. When you have the animals laying on their side, it's putting pressure on their lungs and their airways. When you tuck their feet underneath them and you sit them up almost like a dog sitting, you know, laying there at attention, you know, that's the same position. So chest down, feet tucked underneath them. You know, if you need to prop them up with a couple of hay bales or, you know, up against the fence or the feeder or whatever you have there, that's good to do. And that'll allow the animal, number one, it'll help with them not aspirating, and it'll make sure that their airways are clear. So that's pretty much where we're going to wrap up today. I hope that was a little look into some of the products that NewDart has, and you know, some tips on chemical immobilization for cervids. Obviously, any different species are going to be different than maybe some of the things we talked about today, but the principles that I've laid out here and some of those techniques are sound, they're proven, and they're safe for the people that are delivering those darts, and then for the animals that are receiving those. So we just want to keep that in mind. I personally would like to thank NewDart for their corporate sponsorship of North American Deer Talk. Just a phenomenal company. They're doing a lot of good work there. They have tremendously increased their production over the past 18 months, and continue to innovate and serve us in a great way. So kudos to them. If you want to learn more about their company and what they do, just go to newdart.com. That's NEUDART.com. Check them out. Just say, hey, you know, I heard Josh talking about you on North American Deer Talk, and I wanted to look into some of the products more or something like that. They'd certainly appreciate that. And as always, you know, you can head over if you appreciate the work that we're doing here at Cervid Solutions, or you want to find out more about our vaccine service package that we've put together and helping keep these animals safe. You can head over to cervidsolutions.com, you know, sign up for that membership, get a hold of me, and we'll get you set up with a good program. So as always, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk. Thanks.